You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and we're going to talk now about a new project from the North Dakota Council on the Arts. It is Tell Tale, Dakota Folk Life and Stories, and joining us to discuss it are the people who helped put it together. Troy Geist is the North Dakota State Folklorist with the Arts Council. Troy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And David Swenson is the president and producer at Makoche Studios in Bismarck. He helped put all these audio pieces together. David, a pleasure to have you with us as well.
Thank you, Doug.
Troy, let's get going here with the job of a state folklorist. How would you describe that?
It's a job that's quite varied, and most people don't know what a folklorist does, but I work in preservation of folk and traditional culture. So I document traditional life, traditional arts throughout the state, whether it's saddle makers to blacksmiths to Native American storytellers to Sudanese musicians. And we take those materials and we develop exhibits and publications, special projects, and various grant programs to help support that kind of activity in our state.
What is the proper definition for folklore?
Folklore, it comes from an old German word, which basically means, folk for people and lore for knowledge. So it's the knowledge of the people. There's a lot of traditional knowledge that is passed down from generation to generation informally. That information that is not typically learned in schools or in an institutional setting.
Well, this is called Tell Tale, Dakota Folk Life and Stories. When I grew up, of course, there were tall tales. There were Paul Bunyan and Johnny Appleseed and John Henry and Pecos Bill. Is folklore or these tales, is that distinctly different or sort of the same genre?
Well, tall tales falls within the realm of folklore. Folklore covers everything from folk medicine to folk arts to traditional cooking. It covers the whole range of those traditional things that are learned informally and passed down from one generation to another.
David, tell us a bit about Makoche Studios, because we play a fair amount of your stuff on Main Street. We've had the North Dakota Native American Hall of Honor, and I know that you are the host of the Jefferson Hour with Clay Jenkinson. So tell us a bit about your operation.
Well, we're a world-class recording studio located in Bismarck. We opened in the early 1990s, and we do a lot of Native American recording, along with everything from hip-hop artists to grandmas and grandpas that come in and have songs they want to record for their children. So it's pretty unique to be in a studio of this class in the middle of North Dakota, because we have such a varied clientele. If I had a chance to move to Los Angeles and I had a chance to move to Nashville and work in studios, and I'm really glad I stayed here because of the varied amount of artists that I get to work with. And, you know, that walks me right into working with Troy. I was thinking the other day, Troy, I can't remember how far back you and I go, but it's decades, and some of the most interesting projects that I've been involved in have come from Troy and the North Dakota Arts Council, including this Telltales project, which is ongoing and is just fabulous. It's a great opportunity to speak to elders and learn from them and the people you get to meet. It's just outstanding.
Troy, how did Tell Tale come to be?
Well, Tell Tale is a special component of a program that we have called Art for Life, which seeks to improve the emotional and physical health of elders, especially those in care facilities, through intensive ongoing art and artist interaction. And some of the things that the elders deal with, of course, is loneliness and separation from community. And these kind of things have really a detrimental impact on their health. In addition to loneliness, they're dealing with issues such as dementia or other kind of age-related memory loss. And this project was really developed in such a way to bring the elders together in a group setting to talk about things that they all have a connection with, and that's folklore. And through that connection, they get to know each other in a deeper, more intimate way to help address that sense of loneliness. And then what that group interaction does, when people talk about, for example, Poker Jim, one elder may remember a part of the story, but because of memory loss, may not remember another part, but somebody else at the meeting does. And then through that cooperation, the full story comes out. And then we get to work with wonderful producers like David, who really can put these stories together in an engaging way. These stories and these recordings not only impact and help the elders, but they educate us in North Dakota as to our folk lore and our folk way of life in North Dakota, which we should be very proud of. And then those audios are then also shared with the family members and other people of the elders, so it gives them something new to talk about and to interact about to, again, address loneliness and isolation.
Well, you mentioned Poker Jim, and that's one of a couple of dozen audio pieces that are available that people can go on the website, the North Dakota Council for the Arts website, and click on these and hear these marvelously produced stories. So Troy had set up Poker Jim.
Well, Poker Jim was recorded in an elder care facility in Watford City, which is the area around which this occurred. And it's a humorous story, actually, about a cowboy who was caught in a blizzard. And we can all relate to what blizzards are like in our state. But this is, again, a story about this itinerant cowboy caught in a blizzard and what happened afterwards.
Most everyone in McKenzie County, North Dakota, has heard the name Poker Jim.
He was an itinerant cowboy, and he worked from ranch to ranch and stuff, and he liked to play poker.
Poker Jim came to North Dakota around the year 1890. He was working on a cattle drive and ended up as a hired hand on the W Bar Ranch. It's remembered well that Jim had a love for two things, whiskey and poker. The descriptions of his character ran from outlaw to gentleman. Truth is, he was probably a bit of both. Working cowboys in the late 1800s made $25 to $30 a month, and it's safe to guess that most of Poker Jim's earnings went into those two loves of his. The winter of 1894 was unusually harsh, and things were pretty grim at the Haydraw camp on the Little Missouri River where Poker Jim was assigned. By February, the camp supplies had dwindled to the point that someone needed to make the 65-mile ride to Glendive, Montana, for provisions. Speculation was that Jim volunteered for the journey, hoping to find a good card game and more whiskey in Montana. It was a 3-day journey to Glendive, but spaced along the route at distances of from 15 to 20 miles were line shacks that cowboys used for shelter on rides like this one. Poker Jim made it to the first shack at the Smith Creek camp. But when he left the next morning, the camp boss reported that Jim appeared to be seriously hungover. Somewhere along the way, the weather and the cold got the best of Poker Jim. He was found 9 miles from the Smith Creek camp, sitting up against a large scoria rock, frozen solid, his horse tied to a tree and gnawing the bark for food. What was found at Poker Jim's last camp told of his final desperate hours. He was a working cowboy, and he understood his situation. Jim rode as far as he could, but when he realized the cold was overcoming him, he stopped and tried to light a fire. There were sticks and spent matches gathered all around him, but he couldn't get the fire going. The men from the line shack brought Poker Jim's frozen body back to the camp. but they knew the ground was too frozen to allow for a proper burial, so the best option was to wait until spring to bury him, and they stored his body up in the rafters of the blacksmith shop. When the crew at the camp changed, nobody thought to inform the new men of the whereabouts of Jim's body. The new crew had poker players too, and one day they organized a game in the blacksmith's shed. A fire was started to warm the shack, and the whiskey and the cards came out. More wood was added to the fire.
They got the little fireplace going, and it heated up the place to the point where his body thawed out and drops in on a card game.
Jim came crashing through the ceiling, landing on top of the card table, scattering men, cards, and whiskey. Some say he just couldn't stand being that close to a good poker game and not being part of it. Poker Jim was eventually buried in what is now known as Poker Jim Cemetery in McKenzie County, North Dakota. Later, a group of nine of his compatriots moved the rock where Poker Jim froze to death to mark his grave.
And that is the voice of Dave Swenson, the president and producer at Mikoche Studios, who's working with Troy Geist, the North Dakota State folklorist, on Telltale, Dakota Folk Life and Stories. Troy, so there is a Poker Jim Cemetery, there is a rock there, and so there's an element of truth to all of this, eh?
There is, and that is often what makes a really good story.
Dave, tell us how you adapt these things for audio production, because we hear you, we hear a little music, and we hear a solid script here, and then we hear a bit of that person in that nursing home talking about the story.
Well, I remember the Poker Jim story. You know, it's quite famous in the Watford City area. In fact, I've been up to the Poker Jim Cemetery. It's on private property, but you can see it from the road. And there were you picked a story which I think has way too much of me in it and not enough of the storytellers. But I'll tell you, there were so many different lines that came out of folks during that story. It was great fun. And I have to say, you know, Troy talked earlier about people in the elder care facilities and what this sort of storytelling does for them. And it's really quite amazing. You know, the most recent interview I did was, due to the pandemic, was done remotely with a Korean War veteran. And, you know, I was hoping that maybe I could get 10, maybe 15 minutes with this gentleman. And at the 1 hour mark, I started to feel guilty for the nurse's aide that was there with the recording gear. They love to talk. And by and large, you get way more than you expect. You know, I can't remember who said the art of a good conversation is learning to listen. And if you listen, they have a lot to tell you. And in the case of Poker Jim, there were four or five informants that kept upgrading the story, I guess is the best way to say it.
So how did you gather the stories? Was it you, Troy, or was it you, Dave, or both of you just sitting with a group of older folks and asking them to reminisce?
Well, Troy really was the organizer for all of this, and he did come to a number of them. A few of them I did on my own, but it was the people at the elder care facilities that really helped us. And if I had a list of names, I'd take time to read it, because we owe it to these facilities and the staff there for setting things up and making sure it happened. But, you know, I think of New Salem here, and, you know, they made a room available to us, and we had, I think, about eight people that came in that we talked to, some of them in a group and some one-on-one, and they would share stories. And, you know, that was the sort of setup that we did. We would plan ahead. And then I'd go out with remote recording gear and microphones and just tape entire long conversations and then bring them back to the studio. And as Skip Wood, your able editor, knows, you go through and you find the bits that work.
Troy, are you looking for more?
Well, you know, I want to add to what David has said. A lot of prep work goes into this kind of work, and the folks at the elder care facilities just did an outstanding job. One of the things that we really looked at doing was, again, we wanted to focus on those things that elders had in common, that they could all relate to one another about, thus develop conversations. So Dave and I would talk about, okay, what kind of folk themes do we want to visit with elders about? So we may go in and talk with elders about folk medicine, for example, and then we will give them examples of what we mean by folk medicine. And then that sparks all kinds of ideas and communication and examples, and they start chiming in. And as one chimes in, the other one chimes in.
You've got a couple dozen now. Are you looking for more?
Oh, yes. This project has been very impactful, I think, with the elders and with the family members of the elders. And it's meeting our goals. So we intend to make it an ongoing component of our Art for Life program. So we are currently working, Dave and I are currently working with some elder care facilities focusing on veterans. And we have just a treasure trove of people throughout our state who have these remarkable stories, personal experience stories and folklore-related stories that are just amazing.
Troy, how is it supported? How is this effort supported?
So our programming is supported by state funds from the state of North Dakota as part of our Art for Life program to help, again, improve the health and wellness of our elders.
So aside from their posting on the Arts Council website, and they'll be played on Main Street too, I hope, because they're wonderful stories, how do you envision these short audio production pieces might be used in perhaps other ways?
Well, I think one of the things that we really want to do is to have them shared between the elders and their family members to really have that, to facilitate that interaction, which is so critical to health and wellness. Part of the program also involves working with, the Art for Life program also involves working with schools and bringing kids together with elders. So I can see that this project could potentially develop into the utilization of children in this kind of interaction as well. So there's a lot of different things we can think about in terms of using these materials, and you know, whether it's education or health, those are probably the two biggest things that we would be looking at.
Dave, is there a favorite of the couple of dozen that you've produced so far that just you'd like to share with people before we leave the subject?
Oh, you know, there are so many. We've been, just to give you an idea of the scope of this, we've been in Bismarck, Enderlin, Fargo, Jamestown, Mandan, New Rockford, Rugby, Valley City, Watford City. So there are stories in here, of course, about weather. We're in North Dakota. Some great tornado stories, including the 1945 Florence tornado, along with some great veteran stories. We talked to a gentleman who discharged Adolf Hitler's nephew from the Navy. We talked to a veteran who'd been in Hiroshima right after the atomic bomb. Talked about moonshiners and stills throughout the state in the 1920s. So there's just some great, great stuff in here.
Some are just, you know, really poignant, and some are just extremely funny. The ones about moonshining, there's lots of stories about moonshine in North Dakota. Lots of stories about blizzards, of course, which are so quintessential North Dakota blizzard stories. The South is known for blues music. Appalachia is known for fiddle music and things like this. Our area, you know, those are like quintessential folk traditions that represent that area. Our area, blizzard stories. That's our quintessential folk stories, blizzard stories, and for obvious reasons.
Well, remember that as the snow is falling across much of the region today. Troy Geist is the North Dakota State Folklorist, and David Swenson is president and producer at Mokoche Studios. They've been collaborating on Telltale, Dakota Folklife and Stories. And if you want to hear some more, go to Main Street at prairiepublic.org and click on a link there. You'll be, I think, pleasantly surprised. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.